Hello and welcome to the Safety Brief. I'm your host Elizabeth, and today we're taking a deep dive into how the industry has progressed in security, reliability, and end-user experience, plus where we can still have room to grow. Joining me are Mike and Matt to help me break down the big wins, the ongoing challenges, and what the future might hold. So let's get started. Security in the industry has certainly evolved over the past few years, but we know it's a constant race. So what improvements have you seen that stand out? And more importantly, where are we still kind of falling short?
Yeah, it's a good topic today. And I think, you know, there's a lot of technological advancements that we've seen. You know, AI is a buzzword, so it's going to weave its way into this conversation somehow or another. But more importantly, we've seen, you know, threat detection engine, efficacy rating, all of that stuff grow. Now, has it grown with the same vendors at the same rate? Certainly not. Certainly some platforms are better than others. But I think really where most security tools fall short is finding the perfect balance between allowing end users to work and get their work day done uninterrupted and almost staying out of their way, but also having a high efficacy rating, right? And really what that comes down to is a false positive rating, right? We see a lot of tools that are either really, really good at stopping threats, but at the cost of getting in users' way, or we see, you know, incredibly stable platforms that users don't have issues with, but neither do threat actors. And so it's really difficult to find that sweet middle ground. And, you know, when we look at tools, we often find them to be in one of those two camps. Either, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Yes, it's stable. Yes, it integrates. But what value does it provide, if any? Or, yeah, oh, it's robustly secure. It's great with a cost.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's always that balance between new security solutions and real world adoption. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I was shifting. Go ahead, Matt.
The other major problem you're going to run into is the fact that it takes people too long to actually put new products in place. If your validation cycle takes you 3 years to validate, implement, and then remove the other solution, by the time you've actually gotten around to removing it, you've already paid for another 3 years of contract for a program that you are looking to get rid of. So many industries and many organizations don't look to replace their software. The other thing is, people like being cheap. We know this. It's always there. At a certain other company that I worked for, it was a commonplace that in order for you to get the products that you actually wanted to use, you had to buy a whole bunch of other junk. Otherwise, the price was exorbitantly high. What that actually led to was having a whole bunch of shelfware, but you got that product that you really wanted at a lower price. Yeah. So in order, and then they look at that and they say, oh, well, if we change to another company, we lose all of this that we have over here. Don't mind the fact they're not using it. They don't have it. They think about the old adage of he who has the most toys wins. It doesn't matter if you use the toys. You just have to have them. So that's one of the major issues that we kind of see. But the efficacy thing is the other thing. We see a whole bunch of people that like to make a whole bunch of really asinine claims. And they can't back those claims up. And in some cases, they concoct data out of absolutely nowhere. Like, threat actors are saying this about our product? Oh, no, it's on the box. Don't try to get around it. No, they don't say that. They're better than that.
I feel like false advertisement really needs to be looked into on cybersecurity.
It really does.
I'm glad you brought that up, because something that we see in this industry a lot is bloat, lots of bloat, as Matt pointed out, onboarding fatigue, and people not willing or able to even shift to a better security solution. And it's sad. So now shifting gears a little bit, system reliability has become a massive challenge in today's fast-paced tech world as well, including outages, downtime, and unexpected failures, as we covered in the previous safety brief. So what do you see as the biggest challenge in ensuring reliable systems in this high demand environment? And of course, when systems fail, businesses don't just lose money, they also lose customer trust. Are there any like best practices companies should be adopting to improve reliability without sacrificing security?
Yeah, eat your own dog food. When a major outage hits and you come to find out that said company is not even using their own crap internally, but yet they've taken down how many businesses? There's no way you can trust that company at that point. I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. There is no excuse for not testing your own product on your own stuff before subjecting customers to it. There was a joke that the same company that I was talking about with all the stuff you had to buy, they were very notorious about testing their content on consumers before they would send it to the enterprise customers. So it was a consistent thing. There would be updates throughout the day. They would get 4 to 6 different updates for content files on the consumer side. Then they would release the finalized content for enterprises later that day. They made sure that if anything screwed up, it would impact end users, consumers, because they didn't care that much about the consumers. They were, you know, getting it on their laptop because they bought it from Best Buy or they bought it from Newegg. So if something happened to their machine, cool. They're not a large organization with powerful lawyers that will come after us for downtime. It's an inconvenience. But that's how they would go through and, you know, they would test that. So test your own stuff. Don't make the public be your test bed. I can't tell you how many times that's happened, and it's never a good look. And you can never really have a high regard for a company that basically used you as a test subject.
Yeah, I like to think of it like this. If a doctor or someone was creating a vaccine and they're not willing to take it themselves, you should not be willing to take it yourself.
That's most vaccines, though.
Well, not all, but some.
All, but a lot of them, yeah.
So just doing your research, taking the time, which is something that we've pointed out many times in previous safety brief episodes and blogs. Do your research before you implement any new security stack. Mike, any thoughts on that from you?
Yeah, as far as the most significant challenge, I think if you look at and examine thematically where most cybersecurity marketing pushes, it's stopping the bad guy. And it's certainly a form of evil that is worth marketing against and seeking to prevent. But in the name of reliability and a positive user experience, you know, ultimately the bad guy is downtime. You know, now threat actors induce downtime, ransomware induces downtime, but security tools can also induce downtime. And so I think rather than focusing so much on the good cop, bad cop motif, we're going to stop bad guys, right? Because that markets well. It's certainly true, but defending the livelihoods of people against cyber threats are just as much about stopping some initial access foothold through RDP as much as it is not robbing their machine of resources and utilization and space for them to work, you know, because yes, their environment may not have been penetrated by bad threat actors and bad metaphorical, right? Bad guys. But if they're crawling with a gig left of RAM because somebody has deployed 12 different security tools to their workstation, you've perpetuated the exact evil you've sought to prevent, right? And so bad guys don't even need to get in to have a negative impact to the business and uptime. And so I think it's a view, it's a lens that we don't see commonly in the cybersecurity space, because I don't know if it just doesn't market well or if it's boring or if it's monotonous, right? Just keeping people on task and at work, right? But I think, you know, where we get into true value is, you know, when businesses have to look at, you know, their RTOs, their recovery time objectives from natural disasters or cyber attacks. Yeah. Business continuity means keeping the business running. It doesn't just mean cybersecurity. However, cybersecurity is a big part of it. And so where we kind of specialize as Blockworks is really towing that line in the middle well of, hey, we have the highest efficacy rating in the industry. We're able to back that up based on numbers, based on third-party research, based on internal research, based on partner testimonial, but we don't sacrifice the positive end user experience in the process. And I think that is something often missed. And maybe it's not marketed because it doesn't exist, candidly. Yeah. Maybe people can't lean on that, like 100% US-based SOC. You don't hear that often because it simply is non-existent, right, in the channel. And so I think, you know, again, marketing is what it is. It's messaging, it's storytelling. But I think ultimately, if those people listening or those that are considering looking at a cybersecurity solution or a managed solution, you have to look at not just how much does it stop bad guys, but what is my everyday user experience like? What are my users able to do? What are they able to not do? And, you know, what are the security repercussions of it? And so, you know, again, I think one of the most significant challenges is really towing that line, like we talked about in the first point. But fast-paced tech is, you know, it's rapidly evolving. And so, you know, you can only control what you can control. You can't, you know, as much control Microsoft injecting Copilot into the ecosystem, regardless of millions of people not wanting it. But what you can do is, like I said, focus on what you can control, harden it, and keep the user at work. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, is keep them on their task, able to do their job and feed their family and keep the business running.
Yeah, thank you for that, Mike. And I'm really glad that you brought up the end user, because we talk a lot about security and reliability from a technical perspective or standpoint. But at the end of the day, it's the end user who feels the impact, whether it's from the bad guy or from having all that bloatware. I've even seen cases where overly strict security measures end up frustrating users, leading them to find workarounds that actually make security worse, or the fun request of whitelisting things that should not be whitelisted. So how do we strike that balance between security and usability?
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, Elizabeth, you pointed out something that's really important, because what we can slowly do is create a negative association in end user's mind around security controls, right? If it is cumbersome, if it is inhibitive to them getting their job done, their job, whatever that may be, it comes with and accompanies normal everyday stressors, right? And they see those as maybe tangibles or intangibles that they can control or not control. When they hear cybersecurity or things like MFA or user awareness training or whatever, the common, maybe a generalization, but the common emotional association with those things are more things to stress out about, more things to slow me down, more things to get in my way. And that's not the intent, right? The intent is actually the opposite. Like, we want you to continue to do your job. We want you to be able to excel so that you can get promoted, so that you can feed your family, so that you can take them on vacation, so that you can right? All of these things. But I think, again, if our security tools are solely focused on stopping bad guys at all costs, yes, it markets well, it'll go on a billboard well, but the user's frustration, the employee of that organization who has done nothing wrong other than accept the job offer and show up to work that day, is often the victim of a subpar user experience from a lot of security tools, yeah. A lot of security tools. And again, those shops that favor the user experience often sacrifice security posture. And so really what we're talking about here is that it's not Jedi and Sith. It's, you got to toe the line in the middle, and you got to find a way reliably at scale, whether the environment is 5 users or 5,000 users, to secure them with confidence without feeling like they're inhibited or slowed down. You know, because again, if somebody's working hard and they're monetarily motivated at work and they're trying to make more money, things that get in their way, they're going to see as barriers to their success. You know, and that creates frustration, that erodes morale, that inhibits team cohesion. You know, overall, it has a big toll, and it may sound like overblown, right? But cybersecurity incidents do the same thing. It reduces trust, it limits or inhibits unit cohesion. And so, again, I just think a lot of the marketing goes towards this hooded figure being stopped and thwarted, and, oh man, I can't get into the environment, right? This whole thing, swiper, no swiping. But it really is the more commonality. You ask 100 people, you know, hey, what's cybersecurity like at your organization? You might get some eye rolls. You might get some deep sighs. You might get some, oh man, they make me do this. Oh, well. And again, I think that there is something about security that, yes, it's a little inhibitive, but if you don't educate people, then it just becomes like a, they told me I had to do this.
Yeah. Right?
And educating users on the why is important so that they can, hey, you know what? My company's on top of it. They're securing us. They're making sure that I can show up to work tomorrow uninhibited. And I appreciate that. Like, I need to feed my family in 2 weeks and the next payroll hits. And so again, a little education goes a long way.
No, I completely agree. And if you are an MSP or a business owner, we do offer a large variety of end user blogs and videos as well to try to spread awareness. That's basically our main goal here, is to spread end user and business and MSP awareness of cybersecurity. So thank you for that, Mike. Matt, anything from you on this topic?
Security is not supposed to be passive. Just throwing that out there. If you are using a security solution and you are not seeing anything that is getting caught, then a couple things could be going on. It's not doing anything. We've tested a couple programs that have done that lately, where they just sit there and smile as your system gets encrypted. Or you could go on the other end of the spectrum and it basically shuts down everything. It's a balance. You don't want security to be too passive. The last thing you want is a security solution that is designed to not secure things. I mean, that's almost useless, right? That's like having a lock on your door that has Wi-Fi connectivity, but there's no password associated with it. It's its own personal Wi-Fi, and all you have to do is get close enough and you can connect to it and hit unlock, and anybody could just walk in. If you're not seeing things that are getting caught, and if you're not having to tune the solution, then the solution is not trying. And that's the thing. There are certain things out there, even for gaming, that have the same earmarks as malicious content. That's why a lot of times, if you have a quality solution on there, you're going to see things that get flagged. You need to make changes. You need to permit those things. It's not a bad thing that they get caught. It's not trying to disrupt your flow. It's trying to keep you safe from yourself. We've seen it before where, you know, games get packed with malicious content. It's common. People will say, oh, it's just an anti-cheat. Okay, it's just an anti-cheat that just stole every one of your accounts, that just sent it to somebody else, and they are now reselling it or using it for their own personal gain. So it's about finding that balance.
Yeah, thank you for that, Matt. I think it's also important to have a team to help do that type of analyzing, looking at all the different events and help, you know, configure your security stack to work for your business. We talk about this a lot, how every tenant and every MSP is different. You're all going to have different files coming in and out. You're all going to have different alerts coming in and out. There is no cookie cutter setting. There is no cookie cutter configuration. You need to be onboarded and analyzed. And there's going to be whitelists that are going to be needed to add. There's going to be blacklists that you're going to need to add. But having someone who's proficient in that really configure your environment is really important. And I think a lot of, I guess, MSPs or businesses haven't experienced that. So they have a bad taste in their mouth, whether it's alert fatigue or overblocking. But there are ways to get around that. And that's proper configuration, which we've also hit a bunch of times on the safety brief. That's huge in this field. So, but switching things up a little bit here, there's always a weak link in cybersecurity. And in your opinion, what are the biggest weaknesses in today's security landscape? And of course, we can't just identify a weakness. We need a solution. So what are some actionable ways companies can overcome these challenges as well? So problem and solution.
Yeah. You know, when I hear of weakness in the cybersecurity space today, I could say something like snake oil And what I mean by it is that the difficulty is a lot of people are saying a lot of the same things, but not all those things mean the same thing. And so, you know, managed, fully managed, sock, seam, sore, like these are words that are tossed around and we're on calls daily, week in and week out. And people say, well, do you have XDR? Do you have, it's like, I don't even know how to compute a question like that sometimes, because people, again, they hear these acronyms, the market pushes them towards thinking that these things are their gods and saviors. As far as if you have SIEM and SOAR and XDR, then I'm good, I'm covered, right? And it's like, it's so much more technically nuanced than that. And I don't say this as a destructive or, I'm not putting people down that don't know what these things mean. But what I'm saying is the market often drives with these things is like, oh, well, you just need this. You need this. And, you know, we've even seen this in cyber insurance forms where cyber insurance forms will say, do you have EDR? Do you have the MFA? Right. They'll refer to these things as like pronouns or adjectives. Like they won't even use them in the right tense because they're just so, this market is so term driven. And again, not everything means everything to the same people. And so I'm thankful for the MITRE ATT&CK framework and other things that are going out to try to give us our own standardized vernacular in the cybersecurity space of like, this is what lateral movement means. This is what initial access means. This is what command and control means, right? From a technical SOC analyst perspective. But I feel bad for business owners because they have a lot of wool thrown over their eyes in some of these meetings and some of these booths and some of these sales pitches. Because they're told, well, we do this, 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 and that, and actionable and this, you know, and again, very different tools for the job, but it's not as clear as walking into a Home Depot and looking at a hammer versus a lawnmower and recognizing the difference of like, I know when I'd use this, I know when I'd need this, right? And they're just like, all you need is a lawnmower. Like every homeowner in your neighborhood has a lawnmower, right? You're more likely to approve for insurance if you have a lawnmower. It's like, it's that laughable how much snake oil there is in the industry right now, because it's not that simple for every organization, right? It's what is defense in depth? Have you done a vulnerability or an assessment or a gap assessment of where you're strong, where you're not? Have you put in compensating controls, right? Like it requires a lot more of a partnership, and a lot of people are functionally being product jockeys where they'll sell you something and they could care less if it matters, if it increases your security or not. And they'll ride off into the sunset with their commission. And it really does matter. Like words matter, products, how they're packaged matter. They shouldn't be in 5 to 12 to 15 different tiers with 12 different columns. Like it shouldn't be that difficult to understand, right, ultimately. And this is something we've held ourselves accountable to on clarifying our messaging of, hey, it needs to be easy to understand, needs to communicate the value, and it needs to be simple. Because ultimately, this isn't just IT teams that we secure, but end users that we secure and their livelihoods. And so, you know, again, got me on a tangent here. The biggest weakness in the industry right now is there's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of people saying a lot of words that don't mean the same thing. And they're using words because they evoke a response or they evoke a decision or they even, you know, lower the guards of people through fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And yes, ransomware is coming. Yes, backups can't save you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I've seen a lot of people have wool pulling over their eyes. And thematically, in the past 6 months, I have talked to more burnt out, had their trust mishandled, burned by previous vendor business owners than I probably have in my entire career. And it's sad that every single one of those negative experiences somehow, some way stemmed for either the large IT conglomerate or the cybersecurity space, because they're just, again, they're being told things, they're being promised things that are either, like Matt said, unable to be promised, like you can't make that claim, so stop making it, or they're messaging it in such a way that somebody thought that they would be covered or they thought it would be fully managed. Now they have 1,000 alerts hitting their support inbox a week, right? Or, hey, yeah, it's managed, but now you got to go take these follow-on actions. In some cases, that's okay. In most cases, most businesses aren't trying to sign up for an associate's degree level of homework in cybersecurity. And so if I look at a weakness in the industry right now, it's that a lot of people are using words in a lot of different ways. And I think as the industry matures and as people get tired of getting burnt that'll rectify itself. Accountability will kind of bring that pendulum back and say, hey, this isn't real. Stop buying this, right? You know, and people will go to forums and advocate on that. But I think ultimately, you know, how do we overcome the weaknesses? We stand by what we say, and we stand by our promises, and we deliver what we say we do. And we don't make promises that we can't deliver on. You know, and at Blockworks, one of the biggest core values we lead with is candor, and candor being honest transparency, like even when it's uncomfortable. And so if we're on a sales call or we're on an initial scoping call, we are very clear of here's what we do and here's what we don't do. Here's what we'd recommend you do, right? We have a 21 blocks document. It's a great roadmap, providing more of a prevention centric framework of measurables that businesses can follow. We don't do everything on that document, nor do we try to, nor do we want to, right? Because we acknowledge that there is a certain quality of thing you can do before you venture outside your lane. And now you're doing everything mediocre.
Yeah.
And so I think ultimately what is the biggest weakness in our industry right now is, there's a lot of solutions positioning themselves in a weight class they don't belong in. And their messaging is if, like, you know, they're joining the draft at 17 without parents' consent. It's like, oh, I'm 18. You know, just let me in. Right. And then they're not being truthful. And I think that's a weakness because, again, it erodes the transparency and the trust of the industry. And, you know, again, the more users get burned, the more service providers get burned, the more negative taste in the mouth they have towards cybersecurity in general, managed cybersecurity. And the whole point of this whole exercise is to be a trusted cybersecurity partner that has people's back when they need it. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. And I wish 75% of the industry had that as their reason to show up for work every day. And candidly, I don't know if that's true yet. There's a lot of innovation. There's a lot of really new things coming to market, but you know, the why people show up for work and the why companies perpetuate and follow down the roadmaps of development they do, I don't know if it's that. They may say it's that, but ultimately ask their clients, ask their partners. And, you know, it's something that, again, we're held to that same standard. We got to continue to figure that out next week, next year, next month. But I'd say that's a weakness.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Mike. Matt, anything from you on this one? Any weaknesses and solutions in your opinion?
Reliance on outdated technology needs to stop.
Oh, yeah.
I see this all the time. I see people saying, we found this persistence in this environment, and then look what we did next. It's not BuzzFeed, guys. This isn't rocket science. You found persistence in their environment because your product was so crap that it wasn't able to prevent it in the first place. The fact you had to go in there and shut it down after the fact, mind you, it's only been there 2 weeks before you realized that it was there, means that you failed.
Yeah.
Stop trying to play this and market it as this is a success. Okay. This is not Portal 2. This is not GLaDOS saying this is a triumph. This was an utter failure. We need to stop celebrating mediocrity. There are solutions that are capable of keeping things out of the environment. They are capable of lessening the alerts that people are seeing. They are capable of making everybody's lives substantially better. But the mindset has not shifted and probably will not shift because there is that herd mentality. And if you want to see that mentality, go look at certain websites that have a little red robot as their icon and watch if anybody says anything that goes against the grain, how quickly everybody piles on, even though the information that they're using to pile on with is patently false. It's herd mentality. The mindset is, I don't want to go against what everybody else says is good. And until we get over that, we can't actually be secure. That's the downfall. And I don't know how we actually change that. But when there is a reliance on mediocre or subpar solutions that are out there, you're asking for bad things to happen. We test these solutions regularly. We know where the shortcomings are. We try to educate on those shortcomings. It seems in many cases like it just falls on either deaf ears or people just have no desire to look outside the box for something that could be substantially better. I know I put something up about security teams are being woefully understaffed.
Yeah.
That's another thing. You can't have a security team that does not have an understanding of security. That's one of that, that if anything, if we were to look at a weakness, if anything, that is the biggest one. Look, I get it. It's hard to find people that understand security. And if you're a small company, it's hard to be able to afford or absorb the cost of getting somebody to handle security. That does not mean that you put Steve from IT that barely knows how to do password resets using Active Directory over top of your security.
At that point, there's, you don't have it.
Yeah, at that point, you may as well just put a sign on the door that says, we have no idea what we're doing. Come on in and take it. We won't know. But that's the thing. There's a lot of companies out there, and they don't have that security team. So my suggestion would be, and I've said this many times online, many times on LinkedIn, if you are small and you need security assistance and you cannot afford to have the dedicated team, work with an MSSP that has a 24/7 SOC, has a team dedicated to be able to handle these issues for you and get them off your plate. The worst thing I can honestly say is I've seen people that have made posts about how they want to handle their business. And it's, we plan to offer security solutions. The first question is, okay, 24/7, right? Well, no, we only plan to offer security response during business hours. Great. So you expect these guys to just adhere to your hours that you have on Google?
They go night night when we go night night.
Exactly.
Let's just lock the front
door. There's no such thing as different time zones or countries.
The security cameras only record during daytime hours.
Yeah,
exactly.
The cameras shut off at night.
They can't see.
And the door unlocks.
But I look at that and I'm like, really, guys? Really? You're a US based company. The majority of the threats you're going to see are going to come between the hours of around 1:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the morning when Russia is online for the most part, or China is online. That's where your threats are coming from. Exactly. That's where those threats are coming from. Guess what? They don't care that your Google says you're closed right now. They're still going to get in and they're going to have free run of everything you have in that little store that you call a company.
Right.
And then they're going to leave that note that says we were here. I mean, it's almost akin to clerks where they want to take a nap behind the register and they just put up the sign saying, if you plan to shoplift, please let us know. I mean, yeah, you can't do that. Like,
right.
You got to offer the proper level of security if you want to be able to keep people safe. So if you're going to halfway do the job, get somebody that is going to do it the whole way.
Yeah.
All right. No half measure, full measure. That's the only way you can do it.
You know, Matt, that brought something up, and I'm sorry. It just is a real quick synapse here that just fired. If you're an MSP and you package your cybersecurity offerings in tiers because mm-hmm. you're afraid that not everybody is going to buy what you recommend, don't sell a product you don't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Stop selling or offering something to clients that you know in your heart of hearts cannot fully secure them. You are not doing them a favor.
No.
You are, by allowing that to take place, hey, you know what? You're right. You don't need it, right? You are giving them the false hope or the security that it's really not necessary, right? And I'm not saying that you should upsell and manipulate and FUD people into a bad agreement. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, if you are currently an MSP or a service provider and you provide outsourced managed services and you sell security in tiers, meaning I have a $2 option, I have an $8 option, I have a $12 option, whatever it is, if you in your heart of hearts do not believe that tier one or tier two or both can let them sleep good at night, don't sell it. Don't sell it. Like, stand by what you said, you know, and like Matt said, you know, eat your own dog food. What do you use on your internal firm? That's what you should sell. That's what you should sell. And if it's tier one, at least be consistent. Then just sell that, right? Like, again, I'm not saying that everybody needs an $80,000 cybersecurity budget each year, but package it so that, hey, small business owner, large business owner, whatever, I am providing to you what we use at our own shop because that's what we believe in, you know. And you know, Matt's point about, you know, SOCs not being 24/7 or security events only being actionable from 8 to 5, you know, the way you could spin that is you could say your SOC has gone green, right? We don't consume power during the night. We just turn it all off. We're eco-friendly. And, you know, we don't want to have a negative impact. So we all go to bed when the machines turn off.
we sleep. So you can't.
Right. We sleep when you sleep.
Yeah. It's an ingenious way of doing it. Let's do everything, including turn off the web server.
Turn off the firewall.
The last person out the door, just flip the switch. Everything goes off. There is no web presence. There's nothing. It's done.
No firewall, no way in. You know
what I mean? Talk about anxiety.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. I'll keep my opinion short on the weakness. It kind of plays into Matt's response. And when it comes to a weakness in the industry, my opinion is that people have a toxic relationship with detection only. Tools and services, outdated services, as Matt pointed out. And I think it ties into the health industry, which we brought up previously. People wait for there to be an emergency, for them to have diabetes before they go on a diet, or for them to take vitamins after they're being told that they're deficient on something. There's no preventative care or preventative cybersecurity care in the industry. And it shocks me every day that there are tools out there that literally prevent based on behavioral analysis. So instead of getting a notification at 3 o'clock in the morning that there's a foothold and you have homework to do at 3 o'clock in the morning, which you're probably not gonna see until the next day or the day after that, and not knowing how long it even took to get that email is another question. But it just baffles me that this type of solution is available at the same or even sometimes less cost than detection-based solutions. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind. It really does. Yeah, that's the biggest weakness in my opinion. And a solution is taking that step and making that mind shift when it comes to your health, when it comes to cybersecurity, when it comes to your life, anything. Yeah, I really appreciate y'all's inputs on that. I think those were great points. To close this off, let's talk about what emerging trends businesses should prioritize to stay competitive in security, reliability, and end user experience.
Actually knowing security. I know it's revolutionary, right?
Insane. No.
Absolutely. You know, we're a security company, but we don't know anything about security. Buy from us. No, that does not work at all. And when your company is almost an exact representation of the inflatable, wacky, waving arm guy, that is not a security company you want to buy from. Like, I'm just going to... If you notice, they get really high, their arms wave, but what do they also do at some points? They completely flop over. You don't want a security company that completely flops over. That's just bad. There's a lot of things that I can honestly say, and it's I can't say them all because, let's be honest, I don't want to upset certain companies because I've already done that a few times and it's fun, but that's not our goal. But if you are going to make an offering, follow through on the offering. That's all that's my biggest pet peeve. Like the trend that I see is, oh, we offer EDR. Great. Wonderful. What are you doing besides telling me I'm getting screwed? Nothing? Oh, okay. That's fantastic. Your solution's able to pick up when the initial part of a payload runs, but if I move it to a different directory, it's blind. That's terrible. That's not an EDR. That's an ED sometimes R.
What I love is when they offer that, and then they also offer recovery
or
incident response. So they're already knowing or presenting the fact that their solution is going to fail you. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, we'll charge you out the you-know-what to fix whatever problem occurs.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's that, hey, buy from us. We have a fantastic product. But when it fails, you can also pay
us. These are more expensive products, yeah.
And we've talked about that before, and I wrote something extremely large talking about, is it even ethical for a cyber company that's supposed to keep you safe to also have an offering sitting there where they will fix the issues that they bring on themselves, but they want to charge you for it. I think if your product fails, you're on the hook for that. There is no charging. You're fixing that.
Yeah.
And I know that that's probably not something that most companies want to hear, but guess what? That's incentive for you to learn how to develop software that doesn't, you know, suck.
It's like, imagine for a moment you're on a cruise ship and it's late at night. Ooh. And I'm not saying that this is a true story, right? It's late at night.
Does it involve a buffet? Because if it involves a buffet,
and you go to the buffet and you have a great time at the buffet if you're Matt. And but let's say there's technical difficulties with the ship. We gotta abort. Everybody's gotta get off. You're about to walk into the lifeboat and they say, actually, this is not included in your ticket.
That's $500 to live.
Their boat has failed, and they will charge you extra for the thing that should have worked in the first place, right?
It's like, called the Titanic business model.
That is the perfect analogy then, for that.
You're on an airplane, perfect. And it hasn't left the tarmac, but it can't turn around and go back to the gate because we're not here to endorse terror. We're just telling analogies. And they say, they open the door, and they're like, here's this incredibly fun inflatable slide that we just
I'm going down through. The slide.
No, you got to pay. You got to pay extra.
No, I don't. I'm diving down it. You're going to have to chase me.
Yeah, the slide is not included in your airfare, right? Like, that's how asinine some of this is. It and really I think is. Ultimately, it really is. When it comes down to it, the reason I harp so hard on if you don't believe in it for your, like, if you don't believe in the product, don't sell it, right? At the end of the day, there's two types of parents. There's one that's going to feed their kid garbage and make themselves filet mignon. Or they're going to feed their kids the same food, the quality of food. They're going to pay extra and it's going to be harder and they're going to work extra hours, have a second job, whatever it is. And they're going to feed their kids quality food. At the end of the day, like, you need to have an ethical, self-reflective moment and say, what am I providing my clients? What am I providing my users? And I'm not saying go out and buy everybody Ferrari, because not every kid needs a first car to be a Ferrari. Not every client needs $80,000 firewalls at their edge. They don't. They don't. But MFA costs $0. And if you enforce it internally and you don't enforce it in your clients, it's hypocritical. It costs $0. $0. There's no budgetary constraint in MFA. Yes, if you're inducing Duo or Authy and all these other things, maybe there's additional cost for the relays. But generally speaking, attack service reduction costs $0. So stop saying some need it, some don't. You know, really, truly, like, these are people's livelihoods on the line, and that's why we take what we do so seriously and why today's episode's probably gone longer than most. But really, why does Blockworks exist? It ultimately was started to foster a really elegant trinity of things cohabitating, and that's, you know, security, reliability, and a positive user experience. A lot of platforms out there tout security. But the next time you get talked to by a vendor, the next time you explore into a new solution, ask them about the reliability and their user experience. Because there's a reason that those are not often talked about, you know. But anyway,
Mike off soapbox,
a lot of good topics today. Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, so ask them why they're in cybersecurity. What makes them go to work every day? And if it's profit, they're not the partner for you. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Huge thanks to Mike and Matt for joining. To our listeners, drop your thoughts on the future of security, reliability, and end user experience in the comments, or reach out to us on any Blockworks social media page. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the Safety Brief so we can keep bringing you the latest insights in cybersecurity. Stay safe, stay secure, and we'll see you next time on the Safety Brief.
Thanks all.